You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And the wait continues. We are now over 4 days from when the Russell Westbrook for Chris Paul trade was first leaked, and we still have no official announcement that Russ is a Rocket. To discuss all the potential reasons behind the delay, well, that's what we're doing tonight here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Tonight's show is sponsored by Untuck It. If you're looking for a great gift idea, their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. With no tucking or tailoring required, go to untuckit.com and use the promo code NBA to get 20% off. In today's show, on this Monday, July 15th, we're going to be looking at the reasons why this Russell Westbrook trade isn't yet official and what some of the possibilities might be. To do that, I'm going to be joined in just a few minutes by my friend Karthik Prasad, who you may know is at StanfordKP on Twitter, and a guy that's part of our regular panel of guest analysts here at Locked On Rockets. Before we get to Karthik, though, I want to stress off the top that this deal is going to happen. There's no indication at all that anyone involved has cold feet or that there's any unforeseen medical issue with the physicals. We saw on Instagram that Westbrook was in Houston on Sunday with his former teammate in Oklahoma City, Kendrick Perkins, and Mike D'Antoni spoke openly about the move on Adrian Wojnarowski's podcast on ESPN. Owner Tillman Fertitta, he's confirmed it publicly as well. At this point, I feel very confident in saying that even though he's not technically at the moment, Russell Westbrook 100% will be a Houston Rocket. And who knows, maybe by the time you're listening to this podcast, he already is. For the record, I'm recording this at approximately 7 p.m. Monday night, and if the information is dated by the time you're listening, please be patient, and I'll try and get out a new episode as quickly as I can. Anyway, the far and away most plausible reason that I can see for the delay is that GM Daryl Morey is working on expanding the trade. The NBA has a 125% rule when it comes to making the math work on trades with teams above the salary cap in terms of what can be taken in. And with Westbrook and Chris Paul having virtually identical $38 million salaries next year, well, 125% of that enormous figure means that the Rockets can actually take in close to $10 million extra on top of Russell Westbrook. And considering that Oklahoma City is, number one, going into a rebuilding phase, and secondly, not even having a Chris Paul trade lined up at the moment, I don't think they're particularly bothered by waiting a few days. There's no harm to them, and there's only potential upside for the Rockets, so that's why, in my opinion, Daryl Morey is currently canvassing the league. Now, in terms of potential upgrades, I think most of us acknowledge that adding more wing defense, particularly at the forward spots, is a priority for the Rockets as they fill out the roster over the remainder of this summer. We've heard names like Andre Iguodala in Memphis, Robert Covington in Minnesota, discussed as potential targets. Well, let me show you a quick example of why this Westbrook trade is such an opportunity. Iguodala makes about $17 million, which means that in order to come close to his salary in a straight-up trade with Memphis, you'd have to send out nearly that much from Houston, roughly $15 million or so. Well, when you look at the Rockets' roster, unless you want to send out Eric Gordon or Clint Capella, which I think makes no basketball sense because they're better players than Iguodala, the only realistic way to make the math work is with an Iman Shumpert sign and trade. And if you listen to my show Sunday with Matt Moore, you'll probably recall that that has its own set of problems. There's the issue of whether Shumpert wants to go there, whether the team is willing to pay him a bloated salary to make the math work, and the additional draft compensation that you probably have to give to that team to take on Shumpert at the bloated salary, and so on and so forth. That's a lot of tough variables that all have to line up. However, if you could bring in Memphis as a third team as part of the Westbrook trade, all of that changes because you'd only have to send out $6 or $7 million to make the math work. That's a massive gap, only having to send out $6 or $7 million instead of roughly $15 million. You could even string together a bunch of minimum salaries like Chris Chioza, Gary Clark, and Isaiah Hartenstein, who, according to Kelly Eco of The Athletic, had the guarantee date on his contract pushed back. It was supposed to become guaranteed today, July 15th, if he wasn't released. So pushing back that date would definitely seem to indicate that Houston at least has some hope of a potential deal. Or the Rockets could still sign and trade Shumpert, but then his dollar figure could be something that's a whole lot more reasonable, maybe $5 or $6 million instead of $12 or $13, to where maybe the Rockets wouldn't have to give up extra draft compensation to get a team to pay it. And to be clear, it doesn't have to be for Iguodala. Really, I'm sure the Rockets are canvassing the entire league, and certainly it takes two to tango. To my knowledge, at this point, it's not even 100% clear what Memphis is wanting. I just mentioned Iguodala first because of all the media reports that he's a Houston target. The larger point is that from a math perspective, this is a huge opportunity for Daryl Morey. Even in a worst-case scenario where if he can't find a third team that's willing to give up something that the Rockets like for Houston's package of assets, well, Morey could then take on, say, Patrick Patterson or Andre Robertson from the Thunder, an expiring salary like that, and then you could have that to use as salary filler for trade offers during the season. In all, there's really countless different directions that Morey could go with this. But one thing that seems to be becoming crystal clearer is that they're at least trying to take advantage of this opportunity. And keep in mind that it's not just the Westbrook deal. The Rockets also haven't formally announced even their own re-signings like Austin Rivers, Daniel House, and Gerald Green. That was done back on the first night of free agency on June 30th. So at this point, it's not about the logistics of physicals, getting contracts approved, or setting up a trade call with the league. The moratorium has been over for nearly 10 days, and the Westbrook trade was agreed to about 100 hours ago. In my opinion, this is clearly because the Rockets are exploring their options. It doesn't mean they're 100% going to expand the deal, because again, it takes two to tango, but I think the evidence is there that they're at least trying to. Now, what might their options be? We're going to take a quick break here, and then on the other side, I'll be back with Karthik Prasad to start taking a look at all the possibilities. All right, welcome back to Locked on Rockets. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We're joined now by Karthik Prasad, a.k.a. Stanford KP on Twitter. He's part of our regular panel of guest analysts here at Locked on Rockets. Karthik, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on, Ben.
Absolutely. And I spent much of the initial segment giving the background to our listeners about why at this point we're more or less 100 hours out from when the Russell Westbrook trade was agreed to and leaked to Woj. And with that much time, it's not about physicals. It's not about setting up a trade call. It seems pretty clear to me, and I'm guessing to you as well, that there are other things at play. Now, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be able to expand the trade, but with it going on this long until Monday night with Russ in Houston and yet still no formal announcement, we're at a point now where there has to be something else going on, right?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, with two players, Chris and Russ, making so much salary, I think there's an opportunity to expand. And I think whether it's the Rockets or even other teams, probably looking at how best they can make use of this deal. So, yeah, I imagine a lot of things are in the works in the background.
The floor scenario for me, and I hope they can do better, but unless Tillman Fertitta is having some shyness at the concept of paying the luxury tax, and I hope that's not the case since they avoided it last year. In terms of basketball reasoning, in my opinion, the floor scenario would be adding either a Patrick Patterson at about $5 million a year or an Andre Robertson at about $10 million a year. You might have to add some compensation for Andre for Oklahoma City. But either way, with the Thunder rebuilding and them trying to get beneath the tax line, the absolute worst case scenario if you're the Rockets is that you can get one of those guys and have them available as expiring salary filler later on. From a basketball standpoint, even if you can't satisfy a third team for, say, an Andre Iguodala, a Robert Covington, whatever it may be, as I see it, worst case scenario, with the Thunder motivated to get beneath the tax line, that should be a possibility, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Thunder certainly do not want to pay the tax this year, and they have those two players you mentioned, Patterson and Roberson, I think, are the two pieces they're going to look to move. They have Gallinari, who they'll try and, I think, either see what he looks like in a Thunder uniform and maybe move later in the season. But those two players, I think they'll try and see if they can move those contracts and get under the tax. I think from the Rockets' perspective, you know, they having expiring contracts in digestible amounts, the small amounts you mentioned, whether it's 5 or 10, helps them make different types of trades, whether it's now, in one-for-one swaps or later on during the year, they can add it to different pieces. So, they'll be looking at all sorts of combinations and evaluating potential targets. But I think that's right. That's, to me, the floor scenario and what they can take back in this deal.
There was a report from Shams Charania at The Athletic. It was a video earlier Monday suggesting that in the case of Andre Iguodala, that would be a third-team possibility, that the Rockets had some hesitation at paying that much in terms of luxury tax. I think both of us agree, judging by our Twitter responses, that that would seem to be posturing or leverage from someone involved. I can't see the Rockets honestly being hesitant from a tax perspective, aside from the fact they've already said they would pay the tax. Now, I know that's not binding, but really all Westbrook does is swap out for Chris Paul. You're still in the same place you were from a salary, from a roster perspective. So if the Rockets weren't going to pay the tax, I don't know why Daryl Morey would have leaked throughout this process that Iguodala was a target. So that's why you can never say never, but that report just doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, because if the Rockets weren't prepared to pay the tax for Iguodala, say, I've seen some wondering, well, would they only do it for a superstar? Well, then why would Daryl Morey have gone out of his way to leak for the last 2 weeks that Iguodala was a target by trade? Because even if you had Paul instead of Westbrook, the math in terms of the luxury tax is pretty much exactly the same. So while you can't dismiss the report, is it fair to say that we're in agreement that that feels more like a leverage play or posturing from someone involved?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it'd be pretty hard for the Rockets to duck the tax this year anyway. So even if they stood pat and just added minimum guys to their roster, I think they'd be very, very close again to the line. And that's not what they've said they wanted to do, nor would that be a good move to increase their championship odds. So let's assume that they're going to be in the tax. And then after that, I think they and many of us realize they're probably at least one or two pieces, a rotation pieces away. And Iguodala is someone that, you're right, I mean, they come out publicly in multiple articles, whether in The Athletic and national media or even The Chronicle, saying they're going to go after him. And so it wouldn't make sense to say that if you weren't willing to at least trade for his salary. Now, could they be trying to get him or Memphis to force a buyout resolution or something like that? Yeah, but then I think that wouldn't guarantee that he comes here at all. And so, and the other piece of that too is if he gets added to the third and added to the trade, I think it, the posturing comes into play because Memphis would only have to take back, I think, something like $6 or $8 million in salary, in which case, I mean, they wouldn't be able to do that in a one-for-one swap. And so it's almost like a limited time offer for them to lower their asking price. And it makes sense to put something out there in terms of posturing, whether it's from them or from the Houston side, to try and lower that price.
So let's look at the actual math perspective of this, because before, to make it work for Iguodala, who makes about $17 million, you'd have to send out at least, I'd say, $14.5 million, somewhere close to $15. Now, with you having roughly that $10 million buffer because of the 125% rule and the $38-plus million salaries of Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul, that all of a sudden, to match Iguodala's $17 million, that $15 million goes all the way down closer to, I believe, somewhere in the, 6-7 range. So I know you've crunched the numbers in terms of both mid-tier acquisitions, guys like Iguodala, Covington. You could sign and trade Shumpert at a more reasonable salary figure. You could string together some minimums. But there's also some even more aggressive proposals you've come up with to where, say, for a Kevin Love, you could make that work by combining the higher Shumpert sign and trade and now this $10 million buffer and a few minimums. So just curious, I know you've looked at the numbers, what the options are in terms of the guys you can potentially fit in with this Westbrook trade buffer.
The good thing is, the Rockets have the pieces, I think, to go pretty much from the low tier we talked about, whether it's adding Patterson or Roberson, to the mid tier when you talk about from the 10 to 20 million range, they can get a guy like Robert Covington just with minimum contracts adding to the Westbrook CP3 deal. Kevin Love, and you start talking about higher contract guys in the 20 to 30 million range. Kevin Love's probably the top end of that and what they could bring back. You would have to sign and trade Iman Shumpert at his $13.2 million max, add in, I think, three minimum guys, and then you could bring back Kevin Love. And the common question might be, why would Cleveland do that? And I think it would be, we of course would have to attach draft compensation, but this would be, again, one of the only ways that a team like Cleveland could take back, half the annual salary that they're sending back out. And so whether that's true for a guy like Kevin Love, or you might think about Otto Porter Jr., who has a player option next year, or a guy like Nicholas Batum on Charlotte, who might be even more affordable from a draft compensation standpoint. Those are probably the higher end. I'm also keeping an eye on Toronto's guys, whether it's Marc Gasol or Serge Ibaka, who you can get with some combination of I think you might only need a Shumpert sign and trade. I think between their minimum contracts and Shumpert, they can kind of scale that full range. The dimension I pay attention to is whether these teams have already kind of activated their hard cap, whether it's by taking in a sign and trade contract or using their full non-tax mid-level exception. Those teams, I mean, Charlotte, Minnesota included, they wouldn't mind taking back Shumpert because it doesn't change that status for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone like Memphis or even Oklahoma City hasn't made that decision. And so you'd have to convince them to do it, and it affects the full season. So, the range from Covington to Iguodala to, Ibaka, Gasol, and then up to Porter and Love. That's kind of the range that I'm looking at into what we can add to this trade in a way that works out really well for the team sending out those players.
So how are you balancing, when you look at this, need versus best player available? Because there seems to be a consensus that wing defense is a need. That's why guys like Iguodala and Robert Covington have been discussed a lot. But then you mention some bigs in the case of Kevin Love, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka. Are you focused primarily on wing defense? Or, as it sounds like when you mention those later names, are you open to maybe using this just for best player available and then worry about the fit later?
If the Westbrook deal is any indication, I think, we're still in the mode of let's add talent. Let's keep building, adding talent to this equation, and then filling in the pieces we can. Now, if that happens to be the intersection of wing defense and talent, then great. But you also have to, I think, consider who else might be available mid-season and what are the mechanisms we'll have to get them, whether it's buyout or trade salaries, et cetera. One situation I'm keeping an eye on is the Knicks roster that's full of versatile forwards. I mean, the odds that they keep all of them are pretty low. And so if one of those becomes available, and could fit the mold of wing defense and, a solid rotation player, do you want to have the flexibility to go get that player? Or do you want to fill that need now with a trade? I do think, however, that it probably shakes out where, best player available, someone like Kevin Love, gets held by Cleveland until midseason to kind of, because more trades will be possible. They can solicit more offers and get the best deal for them. So I think if the Rockets were to make a trade now, it would probably be focused on wing defense. Now the interesting discussion is whether they prioritize an expiring contract or they actually want some team control and salary. Like, are they willing to take back a longer, more years and have more financial commitments to be able to kind of build and plan around that versus adding an expiring contract? So that's an interesting dynamic that they have. And then the last piece I'm looking at is who's available in that veteran minimum landscape. Someone like Luke Mbamute is still out there. Would they be interested in bringing him back? I mean, I would think so, given the familiarity. He could be a rotation defender if they needed to. That might give them the flexibility to go after talent. So I think they're probably judging a lot of this, juggling different scenarios and assessing the different prices they would have to pay. But either way, I mean, it goes back to your original point. I think they're planning to spend. And the question is just whether they commit to it now or they kind of progressively add in contracts, add in flexibility to land that final piece during the season.
Yeah, and I agree. The veteran minimum landscape has a role as well. You mentioned Luke Baumute, another name that's waived today, J.R. Smith. I know some will kind of roll their eyes at that, given his reputation for a few bonehead plays, but honestly, he's a decent switch defender. We'll see how Elston Turner chooses to play it this year after the Warriors, but he's a good guard screener, solid switch defender. He can shoot, albeit the shot selection a bit erratic. Is that someone you'd potentially have interest in?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's played, or he has familiarity with Mike D'Antoni. We just like guys who can shoot, and he can shoot well at volume. He's got size 6'6" length, and he kind of gives us the same kind of microwave effect that Gerald Green does. And he does try on defense, and I think, you know, change of scenery, and him coming here, I think could be another one of those contracts that we do to say, hey, this is a veteran minimum player that could outperform based on their experience, based on their skills and their fit here. So yeah, I mean, I would welcome that. I mean, we have 10 guys that we're definitely committed to in terms of contracts. And so that leaves, you know, two or three spots that we've got to add, and having kind of experience on the end of the bench is always helpful.
Final thoughts here with Karthik Prasad. This is Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Karthik, it's a few days old, the actual news of Russell Westbrook joining the Houston Rockets. We all had fairly stunned immediate reactions, and now we're getting progressively more used to the idea. The last couple of episodes, I've broken down the fit a bit more, so that's why I wanted to spin it a bit more forward today. However, you're someone, from reading your Twitter timeline at StanfordKP, it didn't seem to take you too long to start seeing the potential positives to the fit of Russ in Houston. I know there was an initial period of, whoa, WTF, right when it was announced, but you seem to warm to it fairly quickly. Number one, am I correct in that assessment? And secondly, what are the things that you think make him a good potential fit as a co-star alongside James Harden?
I think you're correct in that assessment. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's going to take a lot of work and effort, and there's some clear concerns in the fit, but I think I have warmed up and I'm pretty positive on the idea. And here's why. I think the first reason is that defensively and rebounding wise, Westbrook, you know, kind of solves some of the issues we had last year. I think that's pretty obvious. You know, he's rebounded at a high level. He likes to go, and he's super athletic and crash the boards. And I think he will make life easier, especially, defensively and rebounding. So that's somewhere I think people get that. The places I'm looking at in terms of where there might be like surprise benefit, or how this might work out in a way that could exceed our expectation, I think is defense. And I think if he and Harden can find the right balance, in terms of offensive load, say maybe 32 to 34 minutes a night, they both kind of share and split the duties of scoring and playmaking. I think it might free up more defensive capacity for Westbrook, especially. I mean, I think he's a pretty good on-ball defender. You had Matt Moore on the other day. I mean, like, he's gotten better. He still certainly has some things to work out, and it'll be up to the coaching staff. But I think he can be free to wreak havoc. He, like Harden, led the league in steals and deflections. I mean, I think defensively, I'm looking for almost a resurgence from Westbrook. From the backcourt, he's a great kind of weak side defender. He shows a little bit of like the Dwayne Wade, you know, weak side blocks type of thing. And I'm excited for that, because we haven't really had kind of that second and third wave of defenders there. And then third, I think he's just going to help in transitioning, getting easy buckets. We can push the pace, and I actually imagine almost an opposite effect of how Chris used to run the benches. And Chris did such an amazing job of that, but I think Westbrook can come in versus second units and just push the pace. You'll have guys like Daniel House. You'll have Rivers. You might even, you know, play with Eric Gordon. They can just get out and run. And I think that's really an interesting proposition. I mean, getting easy baskets, lobs, and wearing down the opponents. And if you look at who will have to play, the Lakers, who are older and slower and bigger, being able to push the pace and attack the paint, is something I'm really excited about with Westbrook. And lastly, it's just his ability offensively is just complementing what Harden does by just, if all he does is beat his man off the dribble, attack the paint relentlessly, and either finish at the rim or drive and kick, the Rockets will be a really, really good offensive team again. And that's what's got me excited. I, you know, and it goes without saying that the fit with him and Harden, the chemistry there, the trust and the mutual respect, I think it's obvious. It's a big question if they'll get each other to change and evolve. But I don't see who else will. I mean, if not your best friend from growing up, the guy who's in both you of you are in your prime, ready and hungry to win a championship, then who? So I'm excited about the chemistry and kind of how they build it together. And there's just a lot to look forward to. There's almost like this will be unexpected and something we can all kind of experience together as both the team and the fans. So that's why I'm excited and that's why I'm positive. But yeah, a lot of work will have to go in on, you know, from a coaching and player side. But that's part of the journey. And I think it's worked out in the past. And so hopefully they can kind of rekindle that magic here in Houston.
It'll definitely be fun to watch. I think what's excited me beyond all the points that you laid out, which I largely agree with, is what it means for the future of James Harden, specifically through the concept of durability and extending his window. Because the one thing that's always made me really apprehensive, Karthik, about this current formula, at least the past year for James Harden, is how dependent Houston is on him being in what I consider God mode. Any slippage at all, and Harden turns 30 next month, would just have potentially disastrous effects. Because Chris Paul, he's still a good player, and based on his skill set, he may not age quite as quick as a lot of point guards, but at 34 years old, it's not like he's going to be able to turn back the clock to the player he was 2 or 3 years ago. And the formula that had the Rockets close to the Warriors and contending a year ago was so dependent on peak James Harden that the fear was that any slippage at all from James, and all of a sudden you wouldn't be able to compensate for that, because even if you bring in upgrades in terms of the role players on the roster, when it gets to the playoffs, when big players have to make plays in key moments, if Harden is simply in B-plus form rather than, say, A or A-plus, then the Rockets wouldn't have anywhere else to turn. Whereas Westbrook's ability to serve as a co-star and beyond serving as a co-star, be durable over 82 games where you don't have to empty the tank with Harden and his usage quite as much, in my opinion, that might be the key, number one, to having Harden a bit more fresh in the postseason, but secondly, extending his prime to maybe where we're talking 2 or 3 years of peak Harden rather than 1 or 2. That, to me, was the most apprehension I had about the Rockets as far as can they contend moving forward. Before this trade, they could, but the path was so narrow. It had to involve not just a great James Harden, but an all-time legendary James Harden like we had this past season. With Westbrook, you still have to have a very, very good James Harden, but it doesn't feel like the bar is quite as high as it was for James this time a week ago. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, I think that's extremely well said to me. I mean, Westbrook brings the ability to do things, you know, at scale, at a high volume, that will make James Harden's life easier. And specifically, just even if he eases the assists or the creation burden, I mean, Westbrook's averaged 11, he led the league in assists last year. And if he can just do that, let's say that's the most basic division of labor is, hey, Russ can get guys shot open shots and just crash the paint and drive and kick. That alone will make Harden's life 10-20% easier over the course of the 82-game season. And then, as you say, you don't have to burn that God mode stretch in January like we did this year. You will have that ability to do it in May and maybe even June. And then the durability and the availability. Now, knock on wood, I mean, Russ has played over 70 games last few years. If he's just available and able to do that, you know, maybe Harden now buys into a little bit more of load management. And then all of a sudden, he's maybe 20-30% fresher in the playoffs. And you saw the effect of that on someone like Kawhi Leonard last year, right? He seemed like even though he was a little banged up, he was able to kind of tap into those reserves and put together an extended stretch of a month of just excellent basketball. And we haven't gotten to see that from James Harden because he's so worn down, whether it's 2017 or this year, of getting us into a home court seed. And so if Russ can do that at minimum, which is just help James and he and James help each other survive the regular season, get a high seed, and both of them are relatively fresh, then you're right. I mean, extending Harden's prime, heck, even extending Russ's prime. In terms, I mean, that can be a partnership that they can play at a high level for the next 2-3 years, I think is, that's the upside here. I mean, if you're looking for the major upside, is that they both can kind of find that next level of efficiency and rest and kind of production in the playoffs, that will carry over to postseason success.
Good stuff. Folks, he is Karthik Prasad. You can follow him on Twitter at StanfordKP. Karthik, thanks so much for the time. Look forward to having you on again.
Always a pleasure, Ben. Thanks again.
So that will about do it for tonight's show on Monday, July 15th here at Locked On Rockets. And if you want more content before our next episode, there are, of course, many ways that you can get that. First and foremost is Twitter, where I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Karthik is on there at StanfordKP. And the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we've got a website, LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook account at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways that you can access prior episodes, or you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, those types of things. I also encourage you to check out Locked On NBA, which is the daily league-wide podcast on this Locked On Podcast Network. They've got plenty of talk about Russell Westbrook and the Rockets all week long as well. And in addition to checking out our Locked On Rockets archives, please remember that to get this show every day, the best way is to subscribe. One way to do that is with Himalaya's new podcast app, which offers personally curated playlists and new features every single day. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and a whole lot more. And I encourage you to do so and to leave 5-star reviews wherever you can. That's how we can look attractive to potential sponsors and keep the business model rolling as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And when you get in your car or you go to the gym, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets and listen to our most recent episodes that way as well. Once again, I'm Ben Dubose. Thanks to all of you for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.